All right. On to item five, pension administration system project update. Christina, turn the floor over to you.
Yeah, so you'll see that it's just going to be from me today. I don't have Sagitech and Siegel attending the meeting. As you all are aware, our go-live date was June 27th. We had a go, no-go decision to make over this last weekend, and it was decided that the data and the software, more the data, wasn't right where we needed it to be for us to go live. It's close, but we want to ensure that we don't repeat history like we did with CPAS. We did go live a little early with CPAS, and because of some of that, we're still dealing with that legacy data, which is causing some of the issues we have right now. So some of that historical data is not complete that migrated into CPAS, and we are spending time working on that. Additionally, the Sagitech software solution is not as flexible with data, which can be a good thing in the long run, but it is a little painful right now. It is ensuring that the data stays clean, where we found with CPAS, it was very flexible. So there was some times where data wasn't staying clean, even though we would get it clean, it wasn't even there. So the new solution is forcing us to make sure that the data is clean going in and that it will remain clean. But as a part of that, we're doing constant testing, and we have been over the last few years. And we're doing parallel payroll runs every month, at least once a month, with our monthly payroll that we're doing that's going out the door and paying retirees. We're also doing one within the Sagitech system and comparing the two to see if it's at 100%. I mean, we really need to be at 99.9% on those, you know, those payrolls, because that's what we're paying people, and that's, you know, very, very important. We are reviewing each one of those buckets, so federal taxes, state taxes, deductions, gross, net, all of that, and they're very close. We're about 98%, but we're missing 23 accounts, which is throwing off us getting to that 99. So we're still working on how to get those 23 accounts in. It is historical data from prior to CPAS and then pushed into CPAS, and now we're trying to get it into Sagitech correctly so that it stays that way. So some of those were manually recreating within the Sagitech system. We also have around 60 data fixes, and that could be historical information on people that refunded their accounts. At first you think, why do you need that information if they already refunded out? But there's the possibility that those members could come back into employment with one of our participating employers, and we need that information because they have the ability to redeposit it. So making sure that that information is getting into the system correctly, and right now we're not seeing that. And then we're still working with four of our participating employers on their health deduction files. So each month, when we do that monthly payroll for the pensioners, we have some of our participating employers that submit files saying, here's the health deductions that we would like you to take from these individual retirees in their pension account. And then we're a pass-through. We collect that money, we give it to those participating employers, and that's how they pay for their medical benefits, their dental benefits, some life insurance, different retiree benefits that those employers offer. And four of those employers still need to make adjustments to those files for them to go into Sagitech and be read correctly within the system. So we're continuing to work with them. The good news, though, is that the contribution side of that, so every month we also get contribution files from the employers. One file is the actual contributions they've withheld from those active employees' payroll, and then one file is all the demographic information. So as members change positions, change salaries, as they're hired, and all of that, the non-money side of it, we get a file of that, and all of those files are working. So that has been a lot of work over the last couple years to get those files really working well. And some of you may recall, next progression in that, once we go live, we've been talking with the county about a simplified file. So that contribution file, part of the reason that we have this additional 30-day delay is that the contribution file is broken up quite a bit. So on an employee's paycheck, they might see, I contributed this total amount to my pension. But what the employer then has to send to us is, of that total amount, this amount is the COLA portion of my contributions. This amount is the basic. This is my employer, the different pieces. This is subvention. And so what the employer submits to us is many details of that broken up part. And that creates the 30 days delay that we see from the county. And with the new simplified file that we've tested, they'll be able to submit exactly what's on their pay stub. So the employee's one amount, this is the contribution, and then the system itself, when it reads that file, will separate it into its own buckets, which will mean that the county isn't having to do all of these breaking up, which will decrease that time by quite a bit. So probably from 30 days, the initial discussions I'm having with them is down to probably around 7 days. So we have some things that are really going well, but we really need to lock in the things that are not quite there yet, like getting those 23 accounts for parallel payroll, making sure that the data is really where we need it so that we can trust the system going forward. And so that's part of the reason for the delay. We are going and reviewing all of those points that we want to hit to make sure that we go live successfully and seeing what that means for a new go live date. Because we're very close, we expect it to be within the next 60 to 90 days. But we want to evaluate how much time we need to get these data fixes in. One data fix could take us longer than a different one, depending on what the fix is. And then we'll have a new date that we'll be able to roll out. Additionally, Sagitech has released the testing cases that we need to do for the member portal. So our hope is that we can go live and shortly following that, maybe faster than what we were able to do previously thinking, was to get the member portal out, because they have finished the design part of that as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about the concurrent ability to keep moving on that rather than having them be consecutive, because I think that's how it was, at least for a time.
Yes. And we'll start testing those test cases and modules actually next week to make sure it's ready. We won't go live with both of them at the same time because we want to make sure we're comfortable with that back end of the system before we open it up to membership. But instead of it being 90 days after go live, it might be like 60 days after the back end go live. You know, we'll be able to cut off some of the time in between the back end go live, or what we call the line of business go live, and the member portal.
Okay. I'm sure there's a bunch of questions. Candace and then Jerry.
What is your confidence level? I mean, we're almost there, but we're 2 years late. Do you believe Sagitech has the ability to just finally tweak this? And more importantly, long term, is Sagitech going to be there? Because there are always going to be, you know, changes, different modules, different tiers, whatever happens, that we're going to need technical assistance with. And there's nothing worse than being in an agency where you finally get this great system, and then the supplier, the designer is no longer there to support it, and you're like, oops, okay, we're going to start all over. So I'm just trying to figure out, or is there even someone in-house that really understands the system that's going to be able to assist with us being able to upgrade, make the changes we need, add modules?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question, because I think that's the fear with any new software system. We definitely have seen CPaaS change hands a few times. Mm-hmm. I think what we're seeing with Sagitech is that they're a growing business within our area. And that's actually sometimes our fear, is that so many other clients want them that they won't be available to us. But they are picking up quite a few different contracts, so we're not seeing kind of the reverse where we saw with CPaaS. There was kind of, you know, a few of us that signed up with CPaaS and then nobody really did, and then it's kind of trickled off to where we saw them not responding to RFPs that other 37X were doing. We're not seeing that with Sagitech right now. So I feel pretty good about the company continuing to be around. As far as the internal capabilities, we do have two programmers on staff. We've been talking about them starting to learn the back end of Sagitech. They spent many years learning the back end of CPAS, and they know that. And in fact, with the way CPAS is, they're the only staff in our office that can run reports out of CPAS, which luckily with SagTech won't be the case. Many staff members will be able to run reports, but we've been talking about having them even assist with these 23 accounts on writing scripts to force in these 23 accounts and using that as an opportunity to start learning the back end.
Okay.
So it's definitely something that we're keeping an eye on and trying to figure out at what point would be a good time, because there's that balance you want to have where you need SagTech staff to train our staff on how to do it, but we also need that same staff to get the work done. So we don't want to have, you know, instead of them doing work, they're doing training. So we're trying to balance, like, maybe they do a couple of them while SagTech's doing some of the other scripts. So, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Jerry, you had a question.
A follow-on and then my own question. A follow-on to Candace's question. My recollection is that there is a maintenance element to the contract that we have with SagTech. It's not as if they wipe their hands and say, we're out of here. So
yes.
That's okay.
Yeah, there is. It's a 5-year.
Right.
And then it's usually go year to year after that. We pay for support and maintenance, similar to what we do with CPAS right now. And as a part of that contract, any upgrades to the system is already built into the contract.
Okay, and then a question on these four employers. I don't intend to pinpoint anyone, but presumably they're all of equal importance that we can't go ahead with anyone outstanding, right? They all have to be accounted for before we can proceed.
That's how we see it, because really where that flows is into those pension paychecks. So if we have Christina Dunn, the retiree, who's currently having medical taken out of my pension paycheck and then paid to the employer so that I have retiree medical,
right.
We want it to be seamless for the retirees. There are some of our employers that don't opt to do the health deduction file, and they go directly to the retiree and collect the medical deductions or whatever deductions they have. That's between them and the retiree, and it doesn't come out of their pension check. But these are individuals that are already used to having, you know, come out of their pension check. So we would prefer to not change that during this.
So I'm concerned about whether or not at the end of this, or we're ready to go live and we still have one outstanding employer who didn't understand how important it was for them as the slowest moving part. Do they all understand the urgency of hitting this due date, or we start, you know, doing skywriting with their name in it?
Yeah. They do, and I will say we had one employer with the contribution files, because that is obviously a very big deal, that I had stepped in and had meetings with them to really make sure that they understood the importance of this, and then we brought in our accounting staff because Cicera, the employer, also has to do those same files.
Right.
And we had set up that the employer had a very manual process. We do as well, but we set up Excel sheets and pivot tables, and our accounting department had built a lot of that. So I brought in our accounting department to meet with them to say, here's what we use, let's see if we can help you get it done. So we definitely will make sure to get them there. We're not going to go live with them not there. And the good news is that our largest employer is not one of these four. So
I assume these
are the smaller employers that if push came to shove, we could manually put it in, because we're not talking about thousands.
Okay.
It's, you know, smaller groups.
But we're not at a point now where somebody's going to say in August, we had no idea this was so important. They
yes.
all understand the importance.
Yes, they definitely will.
Okay, thanks.
So I don't know if there are other questions on the other side of the dais, but I have a couple. I guess I'm perplexed about the 23 accounts, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this offline, but I'm trying to figure out, these were problematic in CPAS, it sounds like. That is, they had some feature or quirk or aspect that prevented them from functioning in CPAS. And they're like a cockroach. It just survives various systems and seems to be embedded. Is there any, and this may be a dumb question, but is there no conversion utility? Is there no way to literally, if nothing else, replicate or recreate the account in the current format to actually make it work? I am perplexed by that.
And that's really the road that we've gotten to the point of going down, because As I mentioned before, CPAS allowed data to be a little bit more flexible. And so we could force into CPAS, like, you're going to pay this person and this is the amount you're going to do. With the new system, there's a lot of audit controls in the background. So when we try to force it in, it's saying, whoa, 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 you can't do that because historically we don't see this in the system and this tier doesn't match that. And so it's looking at all those elements to make sure that it, the benefit being paid is correct. And so there's that kind of structure around this system that we didn't have in CPAS. But because of that, now we're looking at building these 23 accounts, which includes all that historical information. And because this is, these are very old accounts prior to CPAS, there's a lot of historical information there. And part of having to do that is, you know, writing the scripts, using Sagitech programmers, having ours learn what that looks like. But it's not just a simple, pay Christina Dunn this amount each month going forward and that's it. It's all that historical, any payments that I've had before that, any of their active membership that we can plug into there so that when it's looking at the amounts, it's making sure that that's correct.
Okay, so that's a lot to unpack, but the thing you said that really caught my attention was it sounds like we can't manually override the system to input a particular data set or to force feed a particular account if it needs to be done. Are we actually, is there a lockout scenario where we literally can't, like two people with the keys can't you know, open the missile silo? Can we not do that?
We, only Sagitech can do that. So it has to go through a process where we submit it to Sagitech. They can go in on the back end so that it's all documented that these changes were made. We, staff members can't go in enforce these payments without a documented process, approvals, and Sagitech's actually the party that does it.
So, okay, this is probably not a discussion we want to have, at least at this point off the top, but it strikes me that as the owner of the system, we would ideally want that override capability ultimately to reside with the CEO of this organization or some subset of management for checks and balances, if you will, and not an external vendor.
Yes, and once we go live, the programmers will be fully trained and then they'll have that capability in the back end. They just don't right now to get those 23 people.
Okay,
in.
So that's a current statement, but yep. But on the go forward after we go live and we actually are operating and owning the system, we will have the ability to do that.
Yes.
Okay. We don't need to get into the QA and QC of that. I just wanted to understand the basic
principle. Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? I hadn't looked this way for a while. Sorry. No, I'm not hearing any. So I think you said it, but in terms of the outlook, are we 90 days or are we 70 days? Do we have a sense?
From what we've started to look at, we're looking at somewhere between 60 and 90 days, and probably by the next board meeting, because within the next 2 weeks, we'll have a new go-live date that I'll be able to report out on. We're continuing with the employee training, so we do have Sagitech on-site doing employee training this week and next week, because we are very close, and so we don't want to delay that part of it either. A lot of the calculations are hitting what we need them to hit. So to get trained on how to do those calculations and then have staff starting to practice it through these 60 days before go live, we think will be beneficial as well.
All
so
right.
The next steps will be at the next board meeting. I should have a new go live date to let everybody know about.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is one of those things where we have to jump across this pond and it's not going to be ideal and there'll probably be a splash or two and, you know, people might get wet to some degree, but I'm feeling like this is probably the hardest part, which is to just decide we're at a 97 or 98 percentile and we need to go, understanding there'll be some modification or some deal, you know, workarounds, you know, that are going to be required. But I sense that that's kind of what the mood is here in terms of thinking about the having to take the leap. So hopefully we'll get a better sense of that. What is it, on the 25th? We meet next meet, I think?
25th.
End of the month, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other lightning round, final one round questions? No? All right. Thank you, Christina. All right, item six. This is a report from the Investment Committee Vice Chair on the May 21, 2025 meeting. Mr. Mearsba, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to fellow trustees. On May 21st, the Investment Committee met. We received and discussed a review of the general investment consultant candidates. The four strongest candidates were provided by the CIO. Thank you. To the committee with an in-depth analysis of the responses to the RFP. After the presentation and discussion, the committee suggested moving forward with three candidates for the in-person meetings in the near future. We did not get into the others, but we focused just on the general candidates. Five candidates were responding to the general. Four were presented, and within that discussion, we narrowed that down to three.
All right.
Any questions, any more detail, John, Jay?
So I was multitasking writing as you were talking, but so the schedule is, if you can indicate it, what's the current working schedule for completion of due diligence, final interviews, and a recommendation?
For the next three, yeah. We're in the herding cats phase right now of coordinating. We want to do in-person interviews, given that we did select three, thinking about an hour. With a little bit of that setup time, we're probably looking at 3 hours and 45 minutes to get everyone in and out, if we're adding 15 kind of between, or 3.5 hours probably to do that. So we're trying to find a date not concurrent with one of our board meetings that we can get every one of the investment committee members at, and then make that far in advance. And Christine, I don't know if you, did we select that date finally?
Yes, okay. It's gonna be July 17th and the meeting will start at 9:30.
Thank you. That's probably a key one.
Here we go. Now we have a date.
Yeah. And a time.
And a time. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Any questions of Dan on the report? Not seeing or hearing any?